May 1987. He asked me to get on my knees and pray to God to lose this obsession with drugs. May 1st, 1987, Van Nuys, 3 a.m. Today I did something I thought I'd never do. I called Bob Timmons and asked him to help me. Bob came over and I told him I just can't stop binging on cocaine and heroin. I think the blow speeds up my heroin addiction 10 times. Bob agreed and said he knew how strung out I am. He asked me to get on my knees and pray to God to lose this obsession with drugs. I wouldn't do it. Fuck that. I won't get on my knees. Bob said he's got on his knees with guys a lot tougher than me, like the president of the Hell's Angels, but he can forget it.
Bob Timmons. Part of the 12-step program for curing addiction is accepting that there is a greater power in the world than you. It doesn't have to be God. It can be anything. But Nicky was always too stubborn to take that step. He was simply too self-centered and wouldn't let me in to help him. That was Nicky Six. He always had his armor on.
May 2nd, 1987, Van Nuys, 4:40 p.m. I've got to wean off the heroin and the coke before we go on tour. I can't go on the road like this. It will kill me. The weird thing is, the coke is the worst part of this, but you don't go through withdrawals if you can't get blow. Smack's a different story. I'm so strung out right now, I couldn't go a day without it. I'd have to take so much on the road with me or have it FedExed in every week, which is crazy. What if I miss my delivery? Also, how would I play? How does some guy's tour and stay strung out? I do not want to know. I'm going to quit. I have to. This is going to be bad, but it'll be over soon. I hope I don't have to call Bob again. I have a plan. I've just called Jason. 7 p.m. Jason just left, and it went pretty well. I explained to him that I've got to get clean before Motley goes on tour next month. I reckon I'm doing $500 or more of smack a day now. The coke, I'm just going to stop. My plan is to do less and less each day, and when I'm low enough, go on the methadone and get completely off. So he got his scale out, and we made 30 bindles, each one smaller than the one before, each one with a fresh needle next to it. It took us an hour. It should take me about a week to wean down. When we were done, it looked like a regiment of drugs, a regime. It looked like an army. The brave new world starts tomorrow. When Jason left, he shook my hand and said he hoped I'd be able to do it. Yeah, right.
Doc McGee. Nicky was always dreaming up fantasy ways to kick drugs that didn't involve going to rehab. One time in 1986, he decided that he and Nicole, his old girlfriend, would detox for 5 days at my house. Those 5 days felt like a fucking year. Nicky was just so sick, I had to keep carrying him from the house to the hot tub because he was cramping up so bad. And Nicole was something else. She kept thinking Nicky wanted to kill her. One night, Nicky came into my bedroom at 3 a.m. and said, "Dude, you've got to go and see Nicole." I went into their room and she was putting her makeup on. She said, "I've got to go to a photo shoot." And I said, "Look in the mirror. Who wants to take a photo of that at 3 in the morning? She looked at me and started sobbing and asked me for a sewing needle, just a sewing needle, because if she stuck it in her arm, it made her feel better. That was on the second day of the 5, and believe me, it didn't get any prettier from there.
Bob Timmons. I remember the attempted detox that Doc is describing. As we both predicted, it was a dismal failure. Nicky seemed to have this strange idea that he could just go to Doc's, sit in the hot tub and eat candy and be off heroin in 2 days. I'm a former junkie, and believe me, it's a lot harder than that.
May 5th, 1987, Van Nuys, 8 p.m. I feel pretty good considering how much I've cut down. I've been buffering my itch with Valium and vodka and cranberries. May 7th, 1987, Van Nuys, 9:30 a.m. Tom is coming from Idaho to stay for a few days. I feel frightened about it. I love Tom, and I always love to see him, but I can't let him see me as strung out as I am now. but it's cool that he's stayed close and never given me a hard time about missing Nona's funeral. I respect him for that. I'm going to be strong for him. I used up more of my stash than I thought. I'm running low. I spent months and even years as a kid living with my grandfather Tom and my grandmother Nona in Idaho and Texas when I felt my mother couldn't be bothered with me. Tom is hard but fair, a good man, and I was incredibly close to Nona, who loved me and was better than a mother to me. She always forgave me, and I could be a pretty fucking wild kid. Nona had been ill in 1986, and I had ignored it. When she died and Tom called to tell me, the bottom fell out of my world, but I was so fucked up that I couldn't even cry. I was going to fly to the funeral, but I was too strung out and wasted that day to get on the plane. I would have had to confront my past, confront my mother, spend time with family that I had to run away from. There were just too many issues. They had abandoned me, and I had abandoned them. People were calling me saying I had to come, but I never went. I love my grandmother, and she was very important to me, but I couldn't face it. Instead, I got wrecked in front of the tube, feeling ashamed and guilty, and I wrote Nona, a song for her, which we included on Girls, Girls, Girls. In my fucked up state, that was the best I could do.
Deanna Richards. It breaks my heart when Nikki thinks I couldn't be bothered with him as a child. I loved him more than life itself, and I still do. I've wanted to tell him the truth all my life, but I've never had the chance. And the truth is that my own family, my own mom and my sisters, plotted against me to take Nikki away from me. I didn't know at the time what was going on. I was so naive. You can't fathom that your family would do such a thing, but they took Nikki away. They did it slowly. It started off with them telling me to send Nikki to stay with them for the weekend. Then they would ask me to send him for a couple weeks or a month because they would say he needed to be around a man or have a man's influence. I miss Nikki so much, but I thought that they were trying to help me and he would soon be back with me, even when he ended up spending the whole summers with them in Idaho. But they were telling him I was wild. And then they started telling me that they weren't sending him back because he didn't want to come. I didn't realize that they were poisoning him against me until one day, when he was around 10, I was just sick of him being away, and I called him to say, Nikki, it's time for you to come home. And Nikki told me, no, once you get some roots and a dependable life and can take care of a child, then I will come home. This was out of a child's mouth. Well, wasn't too hard for me to figure out who put those words into the child's mouth. Then, when my mother died, Tom and my sisters didn't even tell me when she was being cremated. Tom only told me afterwards, when my sisters had already been to the house and been through her things and taken everything that they wanted.
Tom Reese. Bullshit. Nona and I never said anything against Deanna around young Nikki. We were very careful what we said about her. If she had pulled some damn thing on us, we made sure we got well away from Nikki before we talked about her. Whenever Deanna would call for us to send Nikki, we would leave it up to him. We'd never try to run that boy's life. He stood on his own 2 feet. If Nikki wanted to go see his mother, we'd pay his way for him and pay it back again. If he didn't want to go, he didn't go. But he always did go. Every time, until he got to be about 13. Deanna would throw him out every time. She threw him out of L.A. and every damn place she went to. We'd get a call from Nikki saying, Grandma, can I come home? And we'd get money to him to get a plane home. One time, Deanna just left him with some woman in Sparks, Nevada and went off with a guy. The woman phoned us saying, what am I supposed to do with this boy? And I had to drive over and fetch him. Deanna has a screw loose and it's drug-induced. You name it, LSD, marijuana, she used to take it. She was taking drugs before Cece was born, before Lisa was born, even before Nikki was born. She was flying half of the time. Nikki was very loyal to his mother for years and years, more than she deserved. When he asked us for anything, we used to give it to him. If he asked Deanna for anything, She told him to go to hell. Nikki did pretty good with her until the time he went to live with her in Seattle when he was about 13, and she threw him out of there too. After that, he would absolutely have nothing to do with her. I guess he decided that she didn't care.
Which side of the blade is sharper? The lie or the truth? It all seems irrelevant when your jugular's sliced open and you're lying in a pool of blood for the whole world to see. May 8th, 1987, Van Nuys, 10 p.m. Tom is here now, and I think it might be a good thing for me. I can't get wasted in front of him, so I just do my little maintenance shots in the bathroom. Tommy came over tonight. We did a couple shots of Jack with Tom and made small talk. Tommy can tell I'm sick. Tom asked me if I wanted to go to the doctor. I said it was just a really bad flu. If I went to the doctor and they saw my veins, they would call the police in a New York second. I'm going to go to the clinic in Burbank tomorrow and register for a 30-day program, but I'm only going to do it for 3 or 4 days, then just go cold turkey from there. May 10th, 1987, Van Nuys, 10:40 p.m. Day 1, coke and dope free. Went to the clinic today and got my first dose. I'm out of dope. I threw all my rigs away, even my Dom Perignon box. I gotta tell you, I'm fucking sick. I got an illegal script for Valium from this quack we all use. They always help ease the pain. I'm shitting and puking so much, I'm trying to keep it together for my grandfather. Thank God for him. I remember Tom coming out to the heroin house. When you're in the middle of a crisis, it's not easy to notice other people's pain. Looking back, my grandfather had to be dealing with a lot of pain. Losing Nona was the hardest thing he had ever had to go through. And on top of that, the boy he raised was in a tailspin and heading towards an early death. He probably saved my life, and I'll always owe him for that. I will forever regret not being there for him in return.
Tom Reese. When Nona died, Nikki was devastated. But he was also pretty fucked up. I went to stay with him once or twice, and the way of life he had was not to my liking. And he was so skinny. A good gust of wind would have blown him through a knot hole. Nikki didn't inject in front of me, but it was obvious he was doing it. He would sit around with his buddies talking, and their drug talk might have made sense to them, but to me it sounded like gibberish. I used to see people in the same state in my years in the military. It never held any appeal for me. While I was staying at Nikki's, I'd often answer the door for him. Sometimes it was girls. I'd let them in except for the real youngins, who I'd send packing. I never let the drug peddlers in. One guy was kind of persistent until I waved my shotgun in his face, and then he never came back. I was worried for Nikki, and I told him what I thought, but it just went in one ear and out the other. Stopping Nikki was like trying to stop a tornado. I couldn't do anything except look out for him and hope.
Dancing on glass. Can't find my doctor. Bones can't take this ache. If you dance with the devil, your day will come to pay. My fuel-injected dreams are bursting at the seams. Am I in Persia or lost in Spain? I've been to hell. Hope I never make it back to dancing on glass. May 11th, 1987, Van Nuys, midnight. Day 2, coke and dope free. I can't believe it's been 2 days without any junk. Went to get dosed today, saw a few guys I know. Fucking smack, just ruins people's lives. At first it seems so sweet, then one day you wake up to a monster. I'll see you tomorrow. I'm too sick to write. I have to go lay down. I haven't slept much. May 12th, 1987. Van Nuys, 11:30 p.m. Day 3, coke and dope free. I haven't had anything for 3 days now. This withdrawal is the most painful, intense one I've been in. It's like shock therapy. My guts are ripping. I'm puking and shitting. I'd do anything for a fix, but I won't give in. This is the worst day so far. It always is. Day 3 and 4 is when most guys give in. I can't sleep for the pain. I've heard stories about hookers who will blow a fucking donkey for a fix rather than go through this. That's how much this fucking hurts. Today was my last dose. Maybe one more day. But I don't want to get strung out on methadone. If you're hooked on that, it's almost impossible to get off. I'm so sick. Thank God I'm getting dosed, or I would definitely die from this one. I am so sick, I'm even sick of writing that I'm sick in this diary. Unused lyric. I've never been to Eden, but it's nice, I hear tell. When I die, I'll go to heaven, 'cause I've done my time in hell. May 13th, 1987, Van Nuys, 10:20 a.m. Day 4, coke and dope free. Last methadone visit this morning. I haven't eaten anything but candy. I'm too sick to go into the store and face people. Pete brought me a bag of candy and ice cream. Every time I've kicked, I go through this sugar thing. What's next? I'm gonna fucking get fat? My whole body feels like it's cracking into pieces. Fragile doesn't even come close to describing how I feel. May 14th, 1987, Van Nuys, 4:30 a.m. Day 5, coke and dope free. Had to go to the album listening party. I'm still sick as a dog, but a handful of painkillers and a lot of whiskey got me through. Vanity showed up. I was talking to this black stripper, and Vanity got all weird and abrasive. I'm so dope sick, I feel brittle. Wouldn't take much for me to shatter in a million pieces. P.S. Speaking of dogs, I forgot I put my money down on a German short-haired pointer. I couldn't get him at the time because he wasn't old enough, but he's getting delivered tomorrow. I'm going to call him Whiskey. The Girls, Girls, Girls listening party was at the Body Shop, a strip club on Sunset. The band posed for photos with 5 strippers whose panties spelt out M-O-T-L-E-Y-C-R-U-E, Motley Crue. Vanity lost her mind when she came in because the stripper standing next to me was a black chick. The other thing that I remember about the party is that asshole Yngwie Malmsteen showed up. He'd been dogging the band in the press, yet dared to show up to our album listening party. So we had security throw him out on his ass on the curb. But I was so sick from the junk, it was all I could do to hold it together. May 15th, 1987, Van Nuys, 5 p.m. Day 6, coke and dope free. MTV has said no to the Girls, Girls, Girls video because of the topless strippers in it. We sent them one that was so out there so that they would be happy with the one we really wanted them to play. If we sent them the one they approved first, they would have made us tame that one down, suckers. Tom left today, but I think I might still be okay getting cleaned up for the tour. It helps when I have things to focus on, like having a new dog, Whiskey. He just came today. Tom loves him. It's when I'm left to my own devices that I go fucking insane. I've always been too good at making my own entertainment. I can safely say I'll never use heroin again. It's just a nightmare. I feel so much better, but my sheets on the bed stink from the gallons of toxic sweat that have poured out of my body. I have a pile of clothes in the closet with shit all over them from the first few days. I've been able to get a few hours of sleep at a time now, and I can hold something down other than sweets. I feel hopeful. Random thought, cleaning up is dirty work.
Doc McGee. Nikki used to sometimes have these dogs that were kind of messy and sloppy. I used to call them the heroin puppies. Can I tell you something that's not too nice? I used to think of Vanity as a heroin puppy as well.
May 16th, 1987, Van Nuys, 8 p.m. Day 7, coke and dope free. So another Motley Crue album is set to come out, and we kindly donate another fucking chunk of profit to Neglecta Records. Why should they own our music? This industry is the most fucked up business ever. Musicians spend their childhoods learning to play their instruments in their bedrooms, Then they spend their lives in a recording studio creating music. Then some fucker in a suit comes along and says, if I can distribute what they've done to enough people, I'm going to sell product to create cash flow for my corporation. At which point I ask myself, where did we lose the music? We write the music, it's our songs, our vision, our message, our angst. So how can some record company completely own Motley Crue or Aerosmith or Led Zeppelin's music? I mean, what the fuck? System is slavery. It's our music, it's our business, we should own it. I can't believe I'm clean. I feel lucid, alert, and alive. I hurt like hell, and my nerves are on the edge, but I'm clean. Just in time for the machine to fire up. May 17th, 1987, Van Nuys, midnight. Day 8, coke and dope free. Slash came over and we just hung out, played with whiskey and played guitars. Then got out of here and went to lunch. Slash even told me he thinks I'm looking better. I told him I just got out a real bad kick and I was done with the worst of it. He said he knows how hard it is. Vanity kept calling, but I let the answering machine take the strain. I'm not ready for her right now. I'm making progress, but I'm still fragile. More emotionally than physically now. Unused lyric. South Street Sam sells it by the box, half price murder, and double price rocks. Easing in on 20, he's looking 85. He'll be pushing up daisies by the time he's 25. May 18th, 1987, Van Nuys, 9 p.m. Day 9, coke and dope free. I ran into Jason today while I was shopping on Melrose and basically ignored him. He saw me and came over and asked why I hadn't called him lately. I just said that I had his number if I needed it, but I was planning not to use it. The parasites are panicking because their free meal is over. When I read these diary entries, it boggles my mind how much power I had when I finally decided to quit. I don't know if it was fear or greed that eventually got me to that point, but whatever it was, it seemed to be working. Temporarily. May 19th, 1987, Van Nuys, 10:20 p.m. Day 10, coke and dope free. Had a meeting with management earlier. They want to hire a jet for the tour so we can leave right after the shows, base ourselves in a city for a week or two at a time while we play all of the nearby dates. Doc said it would save us money, but I'm not stupid. I know the real fucking reason. They're fucking terrified of me and Tommy and Vince heading off to the clubs, getting wasted after the show. They think they can keep an eye on us this way, and we can't get up to too much bad shit up in the air every night. I see their plan, but I went along with it. It might even be what I need. I said we would only do it if the jet was painted black with a big, naked chick on the side. Doug went pale, but said he'd see what he could do. They seemed amazed that I had color and gained some weight. I've even been lifting a few weights in my garage. My suspicion of our management strategy was entirely correct. Their plan was an honorable one, but overlooked one major flaw. Being based in a city for several nights at a time rather than one night would give us plenty of time to track down all the local services and supplies that we shouldn't be tracking down.
Doc McGee. It was always way easier to tour Motley Crue on private jets than on buses. We could get the journey done in 1 hour rather than 5 or 6, and on buses they were a fucking mess. They were always running around drunk or biting people, and considering the state Nicky was in at that stage, we wanted to have him somewhere we could keep an eye on him.
May 20th, 1987, Van Nuys, 9:30 p.m. Day 11, coke and dope free. Been down in the garage lifting weights and riding my exercise bike every day. It's nice that for once my muscles are aching for a good reason. One bad thing about coming off drugs is putting on weight. Which is worse, being strung out or fat? May 21st, 1987, Van Nuys, 11:30 p.m. Day 12, coke and dope free. Not much to do again today except a few phone interviews for the album. All the journalists are the same. They all ask identical questions as though they're the only person to have ever thought of them. I hate the press almost as much as they hate me. But really, when are they going to ask about the music? What is the meaning behind the song Nona? Or did I know Girls, Girls, Girls was an Elvis Presley album? Duh. I'm really happy to be off dope. I can't believe I did it, on my own no less. To be on a journey that you see no ending to, and then finally getting to where you're going feels good. Like the insanity has stopped. I'm really happy. Pete is strung out, and I hear King is too. I can't be around anybody who uses junk. I just can't, even if they're my best friends. May 22nd, 1987, Van Nuys, 11:20 p.m. Day 13, coke and dope free. T-Bone has just left. My head is still buzzing from talking to him. He had a dream last night that he was playing drums upside down, and he wants to turn it into a reality. So he told management he wants them to design a kit that can spin around like a gyroscope while he's playing in it, and they're looking into it. Tommy is so enthusiastic, and I hope it happens, but rather him than me. When I'm trying to survive a hangover, the last thing I would want to be is fucking spinning upside down. Hope the front row likes the taste of projectile vomit. P.S. You know what's weird? I don't even know where Vince or Mick live. May 23rd, 1987. Van Nuys, 11:50 a.m. Day 14, coke and dope free. Days like today are beautiful. There's nothing to do. Nobody's on the phone. The sun is out. The doors are open. I'm laying on my back right now, writing to you, soaking up the sun, listening to Aerosmith and Bad Company. I'm not strung out, and that feels good. I feel like I've finally got the monster under control. I'm excited. What a perfect day. May 24th, 1987, Van Nuys, 5:45 p.m. Day 15, coke and dope free. Today we went to look at the plane we were hiring for the tour, but it seems management forgot to tell them about the little adjustments we needed, the Motley Crue accessories. So I patiently explained to the guy that we needed it painted black, and we needed a naked girl painted on the outside. He started stuttering that they couldn't paint it black, and I just gave him a look and said, well, that's a shame, we can't take it then. He said he'll see what he can do and get back to us. We agreed to compromise. The girl can be riding a bomb on the side of the plane. Fuck, sometimes people don't seem able to handle the simplest request. No is not a word I think should be in the dictionary when it comes to creativity. P.S. I did it. Totally clean. Amazing. I'm not even the same person I was 2 weeks ago. I've been playing so much music, practicing, writing, getting all the ideas together for the tour, shows, plans, hotels. Food, stage clothes, new basses, amps. Yes, I'm back. Band rehearsal today. I'm really excited to play. Pete wants to go out after, but I can't hang out with him anymore. He's on methadone, but still I have to stick to my guns. I feel sorry for him because I'm his only friend, and he knows why we can't hang out anymore. Junk ruins lives and friendships. I hope he gets clean, too. May 27th, 1987. Van Nuys, 11 p.m. Last night I went to the cat house on my own. I always know plenty of people there. I had loads of Jack and tequila shots, but no more than a few bumps. I fucked this girl in the bathroom, brought another girl home, but this morning I can't remember her name and I can't wait for her to leave. Girls do their best, but they're never going to take the place of drugs because drugs don't talk back. Short rehearsal today, but we sounded good. I was a bit hungover, and that felt bad after feeling so good for the last 2 weeks.
Deanna Richards. After Nicky moved to Los Angeles, I hardly heard from him. He would occasionally call me very late at night or in the middle of the night, demanding money. I would gather up all I could and send it to him, and then I would never hear from him again unless he got in really bad trouble. When Motley Crue started getting big, I was proud of Nicky, but I could see what a toll it was taking. I was so scared for him because I knew it was killing him. It was obvious he was taking drugs, and I tried to talk to him twice about getting help, but he wouldn't even discuss it. He said he didn't have a problem. I had a problem. Then, later on, when he was married for the first time and I went to see him in Los Angeles, he told me the only reason he started taking drugs was because I had been drinking and drugging for years. Well, I never took drugs. And I didn't start drinking until after Nicky left Seattle and refused to come back.
May 29th, 1987, Van Nuys, 11 a.m. Just woke up. Phone was ringing. It was Gene Simmons reminding me that we're getting together to write music today. Glad he called because I forgot. 10 p.m. Gene came over in his new black Rolls. When he was leaving and backing out of the driveway, he got too close to the wall and was freaking out because his car was about an inch away from getting scratched to fuck. Me and Pete laughed. I mean, it serves him right for what he said about my lyrics. Oh, yeah. Pete came over this afternoon. He looks better than I've seen him in a long time. He's almost clean. No junk. Just getting dosed. Gene Simmons and I wrote a song one time, but when I showed him the lyrics, he said they were too radical and wouldn't get played on the radio. Later, I used the same words on the Girls, Girls, Girls single, and radio had no problem playing it. He was always a weird guy. I remember the first time he came over to my house, I did a line of coke and took a Quaalude and was drinking and asked Gene whether he wanted anything. He said he didn't do drugs or drink. And I asked him, well, what he did instead, and he said, I fuck. So I asked him, well, what do you do after you fuck? And he said, I fuck again. And then I asked him why. Because rule number one, chicks equal trouble.